This is Where Did the Road Go? Our aim is to explore the fringe, to be true skeptics and question openly, to investigate the paranormal, bring light to the dark corners of history, and give a voice to the shunned of science. We deal in mystery and the important questions that these subjects bring to light. What is reality? Who are we? And why are we here? Join us on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com for a full show archive, links to all our social media, upcoming schedule, and much, much more. Now, join your host Soraya on this week's edition of Where Did the Road Go?
And welcome to this week's show. Tonight on the show, we have somebody who has actually never done an interview before, and we do occasionally do this. For every Micah Hanks or Nick Redfern, Peter Robbins or Brian Forrester, David Weatherly or David Politis, who incidentally should be with us next week, we bring on people like Tom Blaschko or Daniel Harms, Roy Davies or Melanie Zimmer, Patrick Harper, who surprisingly had never done a long-form interview before for some unknown reason, or Steve Stockton or someone like Christopher Jordan, who hadn't done a whole lot, the late Christopher Jordan. And I like to mix it up. I don't want to have the same guests everyone else has, so I actually look around for people who might make for interesting interviews who aren't all over the place. So sometimes they're a little bit unpolished, and that's the case tonight. And I have to say this. I've been doing radio for over 20 years. I am perfectly comfortable talking into a microphone. I am completely at home being on the radio. But when I was interviewed for Micah Hanks' Grailian Report, I was really nervous. I had never actually been interviewed myself, despite doing hundreds and hundreds of interviews throughout the years. It's not something people are used to until they've done it a bunch of times. So when you hear someone on the show who hasn't been around, hasn't done a ton of interviews, they're probably not going to sound very polished. They're probably going to be very nervous. It's not something you think about unless you're actually put in the position where someone is essentially asking you a bunch of questions. With that being said, tonight's guest is David Carr. David has an excellent site up on the Coral Castle, and there's not a lot of information out there on Coral Castle. He's collected a lot of it, and he stays very grounded with his information. He's not all over the place. He's not jumping to crazy conclusions, and I really liked how he had it set up. You'll be able to tell he's a little nervous doing the interview, but I think the information is excellent, and I was really happy to have him on the show. As I said, the next 2 weeks, we should have David Politis on. I'm probably going to break that into a two-part interview, and I think that brings us up to our listener episode, so hopefully that will go well. And I have a whole slew of interesting guests coming up next year. And remember, our show archive is completely free, right back to the very first show we did. We have a ton of stuff on YouTube, with more being added very soon. Occasionally, these interviews, if they happen in studio, will also have a video version put up on YouTube. If you have any comments or you'd like to contribute to our listener episode, where listeners give us their paranormal encounters or strange stories, get in touch. www.wheredidtheroadgo.com connects you to us everywhere. And I hope you enjoy tonight's conversation with David Carr about Coral Castle. So, welcome to the show, David.
How you doing?
And want to tell us a little bit about your history and your research?
Yeah, sure. This started, I guess, about 20 years ago, about mid-90s. I used to watch a lot of documentaries on Discovery and the Learning Channel. They used to show some stuff on there back then. When I seen the show about Robert Shaw, you know, when he aged a pyramid to a different time period than the pyramids.
Yeah, I forget what that was called. I want to say it was called Mystery of the Sphinx, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, it's been a while. I can't remember the title. But that's what really caught my interest right there. And ever since then, I've been, you know, of course, they didn't have the internet back then, so I would do a lot of my research at the library. And I guess I was, you know, maybe into that for a couple of years. And then a friend of mine from high school, he brought up this place in Florida, you know, because you know, I told him, I said, there was really no way we could do this today. Some of the things that they were doing in the past, like the pyramids and, you know, some of the other sites. But he brought up this place in Florida, and I was, you know, instantly intrigued. And I was like, really, you know, this guy's from our time. And he claimed he knew how to build the pyramids. And so I went back to the library and tried to look up some information on it, and I couldn't find anything back then. I don't know if it was just because people would, you know, check out the books and they were never there, or they just didn't have them at all. But it was really hard to find any information, you know, at first. So I continued research on the ancient world and some science stuff. But I guess around the early 2000s is when I started to find websites about Coral Castle. And I was really amazed to find out that all these things my friend was telling me were actually true, you know. And I was, you know, like the 9-ton gate he talked about, he said you could basically push it open with one finger and it was perfectly balanced. And of course, I looked into all that, and then he told me about the magnetic wheel, and that was one of the main subjects right there that I was fascinated with, because it had to do with science, you know. And it's, to me, it seemed like for him to put so much effort into something like that, there must have been a reason for it. Like, he must have had some kind of use for it, you know. So, and then other things I noticed too was how the ancient world seemed to have all their monuments and their sites aligned with certain, like the summer winter solstice or just certain astronomical events. And Lead Scounin seemed to go along the same path. He had like the Polaris telescope that he could use to tell what time of year, like he could actually tell where the Earth is in the solar system by using this telescope, just by the position of the Polaris star within it. And then like the sundial, he could tell the time of day up to just a few minutes time, and it could actually tell how close you're getting to the winter and summer solstices. So to me, it seemed like that this must have been important for him too, to put all this time and effort into these, you know, these different feats, I guess you could say.
Yeah. The Coral Castle was built when?
He started building it in the early 1900s. I'd like to say like around 1910, I believe, 1911. Mm-hmm. But he actually started it in Florida City.
And this is in southern Florida.
Yeah. It's actually about 10 miles from where it's at now, and he moved the whole site. But, I mean, that was the amazing part, was he would do all this stuff in secret. Nobody would ever see how he did it, and that's another big mystery. Why would he be so secretive about it?
Yeah. Well, tell everyone a little bit about Edward Lead Scounin. Scounin. Okay. Like where he was from and his history and stuff.
Well, he was born in, well, there's two different dates for some reason. Some people believe he was born January 12th of 1887, and some were saying that he was born in August 10th of 1887. I don't know why there's a mix up there, but there's actually two different stories about when he lived in Latvia. And the popular story is that he fell in love with Agnes Scuffs, and she was his sweet 16, and she left him hanging at the wedding altar, and that's why he came to America, was to supposedly save up the money or get money so he could get back with Agnes. But I read another article from a website, LatvianHistory.com. Mm-hmm. And they had a totally different story about his past. They even said that they couldn't find any evidence that Agnes Scuffs even existed. They were trying to say, they were mainly saying that he was with another woman at the time. Mm. Her name was Hermine Lucis, I believe. But there was other rumors that he was part of like a revolution.
Really?
Yeah, like with Russia, I believe.
Hmm.
This was supposed to be like in the early 1900s.
Right.
And then they were saying in the story or in the article that basically he might have left Latvia because of this revolution that he was in. Like, he was basically trying to get away from people. And he might have used the Agnes Scuff story as a cover. You know, I can't, I'm not sure if that's exactly how it happened, but the two stories definitely conflict with each other.
Yeah, and it's very hard to find any information on him at all, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really, really hard to. So I was kind of amazed when I saw this article, and it had totally different information than what I've always been told.
Right, yeah. I hadn't actually heard that at all. I only heard the Agnes story before.
Yeah, that's why I was, you know, kind of amazed with the story, because it had a whole new side that I'd never heard, you know. And they talked about how he grew up in a family that they worked with stone and stuff. And I think his dad owned a tombstone business.
Yeah.
And this is probably where he learned how to cut and everything. But supposedly his brothers were in the same business and all. And one of his brothers got killed working on a church or something. And this was in that same article. And they were trying to say Edward was he was atheist or something. And they were almost trying to put the blame on him for it just because of his beliefs.
Right, and at the time that would have been a major heresy.
Yeah. Yeah, they were trying to put it, you know, basically put the blame on him because it happened. But I'm not sure if that might have had a reason why he left. It could have been. But there was quite a few things about the story that, you know, didn't seem to line up with what I've always heard. Because it always seemed like Lee Scowden was the type of person that was really low-key and didn't seem to want to start trouble with anybody. But the story that I read had the opposite.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just way different. I would always think of Lee Scowden, you know. And it said, like, by the time he was 18 years old, he was involved in this revolution, like his whole family was. So they assume he was, too. And by the time he moved to America, or actually he moved to London first for a couple of years, and then to Canada before he came to America. And I'm just wondering if that could be because, you know, he might have been on the run. Possibly,
right? Yeah, because there's the official story. Does that even say why he came to Canada and then America?
Yeah, I've heard that before, that he went to Canada first, but I've never heard him going to London until I read that article.
Hmm. But does the official story, does that give a reason why he left?
The only thing that they say is because Agnes, you know, broke his heart.
Oh, right.
And that was, I guess, what made him leave, but
left him at the altar or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so then he either went to London or directly to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, he ends up in Canada, right?
Yeah. Before he came to the United States, and they said he illegally came to the United States. So he wasn't, he was never, I guess, you know, certified or
right
however they did it back then, I'm not sure. But I mean, I heard that he was in California and Texas, and, you know, he checked all these different areas for the land that he really wanted, and he ended up in Florida before he actually found what he was looking for.
And now didn't he walk a lot of that distance too?
Yeah, that's what I understand. And I heard that he used a dowsing rod as he was walking. Like, he was looking for a certain... I don't know if he was looking for the ley lines or... could have had something to do with underground water systems.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was another thing I heard when he... I heard this from an interview from Joe Bullard. I don't know if you've heard of Joe Bullard, but...
No, not a fan.
Yeah, he's done a lot of research on Lead Scouting, but he said in one of his interviews that when Lead Scouting got his land in Florida, that he actually like mapped out the underground water systems. Like, he used a dowsing rod to find where it was at, and then he used like sticks or something to kind of stake it out, you know. So for some reason, that it was really important for him to know the exact location of the underground water.
Huh. The now, when he went to Florida, wasn't he sick at some point too?
Yeah. When he first got to Florida, before he even had his land, he come down with tuberculosis, and from what they said, it was a really bad case of it. And the guy that helped him out, his name was Moser. He was the real estate agent that actually gave him the land. Moser took care of him and his wife. And it was said that Lead Scouting had, you know, one of the worst cases of tuberculosis that you could have, but somehow he nursed himself back to life. And, he, you know, when he went back to the doctor so much time later, the doctor told him he was completely clean, like he didn't have any more tuberculosis in his system, which is unheard of.
Yeah, and so he was looking for specific land, and the land he found was not land anyone really wanted, was it?
No, it was said that the land was basically worthless because you couldn't farm it at all. There was hardly no topsoil, and right under the topsoil was the bedrock, you know, which is a light limestone. You know, they call it coral, but it's actually limestone. And I think that's probably why he was looking for the land, because he wanted it closer to the surface where he could quarry it.
And so he was, I forget, was he given the land?
That was something I really, it seemed to me that I've read that Moser gave him the land, but I'm not sure how that worked out. I'm not sure if he paid him back for it or because I knew that when Lead Scouting first got to Florida, he didn't have any money at all.
Right.
So I'm not sure exactly how he worked that deal out with the Moser.
Of course, if it was worthless land, they probably didn't want it anyway.
Yeah, I'm thinking it might have been owned by Moser himself, and he was just basically letting him, you know, take a piece of the land to live on.
And then he started building.
Yeah, from what I understand, he already had the first block pulled out of the ground within the first 3 days that he was there.
And how did he cut the blocks? Do we know that?
That's one of the mysteries that nobody can really figure out. I was told when I went to Coral Castle, the guy told me that he used like leaf springs, and he would pound the leaf springs into the ground, and you could see some of the marks on the blocks where it did look like that's what he might have done, but there's no marks like that underneath of the blocks. So it's kind of a mystery. How did he cut underneath, and then how did he pull that first block out of the ground? You know, how could he get the rope underneath the block? And, you know, there's a lot of different mysteries about how he actually cut it, and, you know, how did he get the rope underneath of it?
Yeah, yeah.
Now,
what do we know about how he moves stuff? There's a video, wasn't there? A little short film?
Yeah, there was a film, and I'm not sure who made it, but it does show Lead Scouting demonstrating a few things. It doesn't show him actually cutting the blocks, but it does show him lifting one out using a tripod. And he uses like a ratchet that he cranks with the chain to pull the block along. He had the block on some round, you know, pieces of wood.
Mm-hmm.
He was... that was pretty much all they showed with him moving a block around in the video.
And that was a small block, wasn't it?
Yeah. just judging by the size of it, it didn't even look like the same size blocks that were in his wall. There were probably 15 tons, I think.
Wow. What's the biggest stone there?
The biggest one is the 30-ton block. That's it has the gable on top. That's one of the biggest mysteries about the whole site was the 30-ton block, because I don't know if you heard of Chris Dunn, but
yeah.
He said the chain that he used wouldn't have been able to lift a 30-ton block without breaking. It would have taken a huge chain to be able to do that with. So that's like one of the biggest mysteries of the whole site, is how did he move that block and set it in place.
It seems like we would need massive amounts of machinery to do this.
Yeah, definitely. Well, they did a repair on the gate, like back in the 80s, I guess 85, somewhere around that time, and they had to use a crane, you know, to move it. And it was, they said the back of the crane was coming off the ground.
And it's never worked right since it actually broke, right? They repaired it twice?
Yeah, they repaired it twice. And the last time they repaired it was right after I was there last time. And I tried pushing it, and it was not as easy as, you know, with one finger. There was no way you could push it open that easily.
So do they know how he set it the first time? Do they know what he did?
Well, when they pulled the gate off the first time, they found that it was sitting on a truck bearing, and the gate from top to bottom had a hole drilled through it, which is another mystery. How did he get this hole perfectly down the center of the gate? Because it's pretty tall. I don't know if you've seen pictures of it, but
I have.
I mean, it's taller. It's got to be 6 to 8 feet tall. That's one of the biggest mysteries, is how did he drill this hole down the middle of this gate? You know. And make it perfectly balanced to where you could, you know, just like the video we saw, there was a kid pushing it open, and you could tell he wasn't putting much force on it. And, you know, a little kid, probably 5 years old, could push that gate open.
Yeah. And so they didn't replace it with a truck bearing again?
I think they tried to do exactly like, you know, Ed had it, but it just didn't work out. It never worked the same.
Huh. Which means he balanced that thing, like, impeccably on that bearing.
Yeah. Yeah, as a matter of fact, that's what went wrong with it, was the bearing had rusted.
Mm.
So, you know, I guess it kind of collapsed down on the bearing, and then it wouldn't spin anymore.
And that it had been there for quite a long time by the time that happened.
Yeah, that was one of the original pieces that he had in Florida City that he had moved. As a matter of fact, he called the place Rock Gate Park at first. After that gate. So I know that that had to be, you know, in the early 1900s when he first made that gate, and then he moved it, and you know, it still worked after the move, so he basically did it twice.
And so, okay, so he builds Coral Castle. Do we know how long it took him to build the whole castle? That we know, right?
Yeah, it pretty much took him the whole time he was in Florida, like 1910, I'm guessing, till 1951 was when he died. And I know that he worked on it all the way up till the end.
Well, how long did it take him to build the first part before he moved it? Do you know when he moved it?
Yeah, I was trying to remember exactly how long it was. It wasn't very long. It was just a couple years. I know it was just a few years later.
Okay, so it wasn't like decades.
Nah. It was rumored that there was some guys that started a fight with them, or they jumped them.
Yeah.
And tried to rob them, and that was one of the reasons why he moved the site. That's, you know, that hasn't been confirmed, but that's what people think, because he was really secretive about everything, so I don't think he really told anybody why he was doing it. But
And that's the thing. Everything he did was so secretive, and there's so little concrete evidence other than the castle itself.
Yeah, that's what's amazing about it was, you know, he said he knew how to build the pyramids, and he was basically the only person to leave the evidence behind, but he never told anybody. You know?
Which is the most frustrating thing in the world.
It is very... I mean, that's what really got me, you know, into it, was because I wanted to learn the secret, you know, because he obviously knew what was going on to leave this type of evidence behind.
Now, how big is the castle?
The actual living quarters that he lives in?
Well, the dimensions of the whole thing, like around the walls. Like, is it an immense place?
It's pretty good size. I would say at least, you know, a couple hundred yards across. I don't know exact dimensions, but it's pretty good size. And he was trying to, that was another thing the guide told me, was that he was trying to build a wall completely around the entire site. And he didn't have enough time to finish that.
Now, when he moved it, he literally took it apart piece by piece, right?
Yeah.
And just put it on trucks?
Yeah, he would move it one piece or a few pieces at a time. And from what I understand, he would load and unload the truck by himself with nobody around to witness it.
And do you know how long it took him to get them on the truck? It wasn't long, was it?
Well, there was a story about a guy that, one of the truck drivers that left the site and came back like 15 minutes, 20 minutes later to get his lunch because he had forgotten it in the truck or something. And he claims that Ed had already had the truck pretty much loaded in that little bit of time.
There didn't seem to, was there any evidence of how he was doing it? Like, were there pulleys or the tripod or any of that stuff?
From what I understand, the truck driver said the only thing he saw was some block and tackle laying on the ground, and he didn't see any other like major tools, no tripod or nothing like that.
And how far did he move it?
He moved it about 10 miles or 10 miles south.
And he moved toward a more populated area, right?
Yeah, it was actually, he was trying to get in a less populated area.
Oh.
He was trying to get away from prying eyes, I guess you could say.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I thought he moved it to a more populated area to be safer or something.
Yeah, from what I understand, when he moved it to the second area, that he was doing it for privacy reasons also.
Now, what about people who tried to sneak up on him, like while he was building?
There was some people claim that he had a sixth sense, that he could actually tell when people approached him, but he never explained that, how he knew that. But there'd be people trying to spy on him, and when they come up to him, he would stop his work and he would just, you know, yell out in the direction, "I know you're there, and I'm not going to keep working until you leave, or you know, or I'm not going to continue until I see you and I talk to you, or whatever." And nobody really ever explained how he knew that. He never explained it.
Weren't there some kids who claimed to have seen him moving blocks?
Yeah, there was. That's basically, they're all rumors. It was another kid, or a few kids said that they snuck up on him one night and saw him moving some blocks. Like, they said that he was floating the blocks like helium balloons, but nobody really believed them because they were kids, you know. So that was one of those stories that got passed along, but it's not really confirmed if it's really true or not. But
of course not.
Yeah. But something like that, you know, it doesn't seem like a kid would make that story up.
Yeah. And I mean, he's obviously moving them with some degree of ease.
Yeah, definitely.
Tell us a little about the flywheel at the bottom of the tower.
That was really interesting. When I went to Coral Castle, I brought a compass with me because I've always heard that if you spun the wheel with the compass next to it, that the compass would spin. And, you know, of course, that's what happened. And he has all these U magnets inside this wheel that's basically concreted together, and they're all reversed of each other, so that when you do spin the wheel, it's like north, south, north, south. So it'll make the compass actually spin in place as it's spinning. So to me, that's a sure sign that the magnetic field around when you spin that is doing the same thing.
Yeah, and why?
Yeah, it seems like there has to be, because that's kind of like how a motor works, or a generator.
Right.
It was with, you know, the spinning magnets. And if you look at the old picture, the one and only picture of him spinning the wheel, it looks like he has generators or something hooked up around it. And it makes me wonder if he had figured out a way to get electricity off of this wheel and run these generators.
What other equipment did he have around that was found after he died?
A few of the things I noticed in the video I did see in the tool room, like the ratchet that he used, the crank with the chain. Did you see the video?
No.
It's he somehow would mount this ratchet to the ground, and then as he cranked it, it would pull the block towards him as he cranked it. And I did see that piece in there. Mm. But I also noticed quite a few pieces in there that I have no idea what he used them for, and they were very unique. There was nothing that I'd seen before. He definitely constructed it himself. And, it makes you wonder, what were those for? It seems like he wouldn't have put the time into making these things if he didn't use them for something.
Yeah. And didn't you say there were wires running around, too?
Yeah, they had a display of all these different electrical components that he created. And, he had, glass bottles with wire wrapped around them and this long, tube. It looked like it might have been made out of porcelain or something that had a wire wrapped all the way down it. And he just had, rolls of wire. It seemed like he was definitely doing something with electricity, but he wasn't supposed to have electricity there. They say he didn't even have electricity, but somehow he must have been generating it because he had all these different components there. And to me, it doesn't seem like all that stuff would be there unless he was actually using it.
Right. And didn't he have a radio too?
Yeah, he had a crystal radio, which it's basically a receiver. And from what I understand, it runs off the crystal, kind of like a quartz watch does.
Ah.
So you wouldn't need any electricity to run that.
And wasn't there something where they came to see, like the military came to see him about the radio or something?
Yeah, that was another story I heard that he, for some reason, his radio was interfering with one of the bases nearby. And when they came by to investigate it, I guess they sent some of their top guys over because they were worried that he might have been a Russian spy or something.
Yeah.
So I guess once they interviewed him and they saw what he had going on there, they just, from what I understand, they were kind of fascinated with what he had going on. But
I'm sure.
They didn't, I guess they didn't see it as a threat, so they didn't do anything about it. From what I understand, they just told him not to I guess it was a certain frequency he was using.
Mm.
And from what I heard, he told them that he was just using the radio for getting news and listening to free music or something on it.
Which, is clearly possible why he would be using it. You had another theory about the radio, though, didn't you?
Yeah, it kind of came from a idea that Chris Dunn had, but his is a little different than what I was thinking, but The tripods that Lead Scout had used had this mysterious box on the top of it, and it had a ladder that went up to this box, and nobody knows what was inside the box. Chris Dunn was saying that he thought there was a radio in the box that would send out, radio waves, and that was kind of what I was thinking too, that if, scientists use sound waves to levitate stuff in a lab. But I know that's different than radio. Radio waves don't travel through a medium like sound waves do. But could he have possibly figured out a way to make these radio waves work the same way as they did the sound waves in the lab?
All right, well, we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with David Carr.
Where Did the Road Go can be heard first and usually live on WVBR, Saturday nights at 11 p.m. Eastern. Go to wheredidtheroadgo.com to ask questions of our live guests through the chat room. Where Did the Road Go is then re-aired on Dark Matter Radio and Deprogrammed Radio. You can download all shows for free on the website, and you can subscribe to us on Stitcher, iTunes, YouTube, or Vimeo. Additional content can be found on our video channels. You will also find our upcoming schedule, book reviews, blogs, free book downloads, links, and more. We are also on Facebook and Twitter, and if you want to help support the show, there are links to donate to us. Everything you need can be found at WhereDidTheRoadGo.com.
And we're talking with David Carr primarily about Coral Castle, a very unusual structure down in South Florida. And David, where can people find you on the web before we go on?
Well, I got a couple websites. I got one on WordPress. It's Universal Wave Theory on WordPress. And then I have another one. Actually, I have a few of them, but I have one on Weebly. And excuse me, and that one's davidcarr.weebly.com, and that's all about, that whole site's all about Coral Castle, and there's some videos and pictures that I took while I was there. See, I got another site. It's on Wix. I just finished that site not too long ago, and that one's researched by davidcarr.wix.com/davidcarr.
Is that also mostly Coral Castle?
That's more of a research website. It's a mixture of everything that I research.
And you are working on a book.
Yeah, the book is just like the site. It's a mixture of things. It's it has some Coral Castle subject in it, but it also covers a lot of science material, some of my ideas, some of the ancient world, some of the ideas from how they may have done a few things in the ancient world.
All right, and getting back to Coral Castle a bit, tell us a little bit about the sundial.
The sundial, that was pretty amazing, that piece. It has two pieces of metal. I guess they're square, but they're embedded in the rock. I guess you use concrete to embed them in the rock, but when the sun casts the shadow of these two metal rods on the pattern below, it shows the exact time to up to the minute, and the pattern is in loops, and it has like numbers on the top of the loops that are for the hour. The loops that have no numbers are for the half hour. He said one time that the sundial proves that the Earth doesn't orbit the sun like scientists think it does, but I haven't really quite figured out what he meant by that.
Huh. Yeah, that's a weird statement.
Yeah, because when it's at the top, it's at the winter solstice, and then at the bottom, it's at the summer solstice, but He has the these loops that where the time, where it lines up with the shadow, will tell the time.
Huh. Well, what about the moon pond?
The moon pond. That was, from what I understand, the center part of the moon pond is actually one of the heaviest pieces there. But he has this design in it that's kind of fascinated me. The exact middle of the pond has like a star shape in it, and then around the edge is like a wavy shape. And I just wonder if he was trying to describe that orbit that he was talking about with the wavy, shape around the edge.
Now, one of the stories is they used to ride a bike with just rims on it.
Yeah, there was a couple rumors about that. I've heard that he did that because the contact with the ground would create electricity or something, and it was part of his healing process from his tuberculosis.
Mm.
And then I heard that he used it at, like he did the dowsing rod, when he rode this bike with the metal contact with the ground, would somehow, he would, steer him in the right direction, I guess, looking for these ley lines.
And how did he know to do things like that is the bigger question. I mean, how did he know to do any of this?
Yeah, that's the big mystery, because like I was saying before, when he finally got his land, it didn't take him any time at all to start actually doing stuff.
Yeah, it's like he knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah, that was one of the things I always wondered, because it didn't seem like he didn't waste any time. He went right to it. And he must have learned from somewhere, he must have learned this stuff over time as he was going through the country, or maybe when he was in Latvia. I'm sure he learned a lot of it when he worked with his dad.
Yeah, but his dad never built anything like Coral Castle.
Yeah, exactly. That was one of the mysteries that I've always been trying to figure out, was how he learned it so quick, because
it just springs up out of nowhere.
Yeah, he didn't waste no time. Like I was saying, within the first 3 days he had that land, he already had a block out of the ground. And I'm wondering if it was just something that he always thought would he could do, or if it's something that he already knew how to do.
Yeah, and where, I mean, obviously he learned it somewhere.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't experimenting to figure out how to do this, which suggests to me that someone gave him this information at some point.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. Like you were saying, it just sprung up out of nowhere. And to me, it's He must have done this similar thing before, or I just can't see how he could, you know, learn all that overnight.
And if he did it before, where's the earlier efforts?
Yeah,
it's like almost maddening, in the fact that here's something in historical time, not, you know, 2,000 years ago or 8,000 mm-hmm. years ago, that this guy built and didn't tell us how he did it.
Yeah, that's what definitely got me hooked on that story, on the whole thing, was because he's the only guy from our time to actually do something like this.
Wasn't there also a story that he used to wear iron soles on his shoes?
Yeah, that from what I understand, he had like a old car bumper cut in the soles and put to the bottom of his shoes.
Huh.
And it was said that he did that because his soles kept wearing out so quickly, but I mean, that could have just been his excuse or whatever, you know?
Yeah, because he was obviously hiding whatever he was really doing for some reason.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, at that time, he might have also been afraid someone was going to accuse him of witchcraft or something.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not dealing with current day where someone might be like, oh, what's the theory behind what you're doing? How does it work? They might just freak out.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, there must have been a really good reason for him to keep it secret, because it seems like he would, with some information like that, he would want to tell the world about it, you know?
Yeah.
If you figured out how to build the pyramids, it seems like you'd want everybody to know.
There was also, when questioned at some point, you said he would reply that he understood the laws of weight and leverage well.
Yes.
And I would think no matter how much you understood the laws of weight and leverage, moving a 30-ton stone up into the position he put that one in?
Yeah.
That's a little beyond just understanding laws of weight and leverage.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, I always wondered that myself, because, I mean, there's been other people out there that say they've figured it out and try to demonstrate it, but the equipment that they used, I never saw anything like that at Coral Castle.
Yeah, now there was never, I mean, other than the tripods, there was never any big equipment that anyone saw, was there?
No, not at all. I mean, the only, you know, pictures and film is him using the tripods and that crank that he was using to pull the blocks. That's the only thing. And then there's the one picture of him using the magnetic wheel, but there's really, you can't really tell what's going on in that picture. It does have some strange things about it. Like, it looks like he wraps all these chains around the poles, and there's another chain that looks like it's being pulled in like a magnet, you know, like a magnet was pulling on it.
Are these videos on your site?
I got links to them on my site.
Which site?
The WordPress site.
Okay, that's universalwavetheory.wordpress.com.
Yeah, I have. It's in the article itself. There's references at the bottom that have all the links to the different videos. I know some of them might be broken links now.
Right, right. Well, it is the internet.
Yeah.
Now, how did Lead Skalman die?
They say that he died from some kind of stomach cancer, I believe it was. He just, from what I understand, he didn't feel well, and he went to the hospital. And he was in the hospital for a couple of days, and they said that he was starting to look better, but then the next day he relapsed, and you know, he didn't make it. So.
Yeah, it was very quick, wasn't it?
Yeah, he didn't. It was like within a week's time, I believe.
And he was never a big guy either. We should probably make that clear. He was a very small man.
Yeah, he was. From what I understand, the video says he was 120 pounds, but I heard he was even lighter than that. I heard he was like around 100 pounds.
Wow. Huh. Now he did leave a book.
He did a couple of books. The main one was called Magnetic Current. And that book had a lot of his experiments in it, and it seemed like he was trying to tell us something in those books, because when you read them, they're not nearly the same as what accepted science tells us, especially about magnets and the magnetic field and electricity. And I'm just wondering if this is part of the reason why he could accomplish these things. Is because of his experiments in this book.
What was the second book?
He wrote another book called it was called A Book for All Homes, and then there was another one that he wrote that I just found today. I didn't even know they had, but I'd have to look it up.
That's all right. So, but no one can quite figure out what the books are talking about, can they?
Yeah, they are kind of. I mean, I've read them a couple times, and you really have to. They are kind of confusing the way they're written. You really have to read it over and over and over to kind of figure out what he's trying to say during certain things. But I mean, I got a little bit out of it. From what I understand, he tries to explain that the magnetic field of the Earth is from tiny magnets that they flow like particles, basically. And there's a South Pole individual magnet and a North Pole individual magnet that run through each other, and they run through objects. He tried to explain that they're so small that they can, you know how you can put a magnet underneath of a table and then put a piece of metal on top and move the metal,
uh-huh.
that they're so small that they can pass through the table, or they can pass through the actual magnet, the metal of the magnet itself.
Huh. Yeah, I know. I only knew there was one book. That's fascinating that there's three. Where can people find these anywhere, like online or anything?
Yeah, there's a site called it's leadscouting.com. They have a list of all the books on there. It's I'm looking at it now. It's Lead Scouting's writings. There's a book for a book in every home, magnetic current, minerals, vegetable, and animal life.
And so that's leadscouting.com?
It's yes, www.leadscouting.com.
And his last name is spelled LeedSkalnin.
Yes, that's correct.
Which is why it's so hard to pronounce.
Yeah, I've heard it pronounced Leedscalnin, but then it seems like more people pronounce it Leedscalnin.
And of course, there's tons of crazy theories that have built up around this place. Obviously, one of the common ones is that aliens had something to do with it.
Yeah.
Which has no founding in anything other than the fact that we don't know how he did it.
Yeah.
You were telling me a story, though, that someone actually approached you with a theory like this.
Yeah. When I was the second time I went, which was at the winter solstice in 2005, a man approached me about Leedscalnin, and he said that Ed was an alien, and he knew where this alien, where Ed was buried in the woods. And he asked me if I wanted to come out there with him the next day and dig up this alien body.
So he said Ed was an alien.
Yeah, he said Ed was an actual alien. And I'm thinking, when in the tool room, when you go in his, you know, the tool room, which is the bottom floor of the castle, there's a picture of Ed's tombstone in there. And I'm thinking, well, you know, who's buried there then?
Well, clearly not Ed if he was an alien, because you have someone going and digging him up.
Yeah, exactly. But this guy was definitely, you know, I couldn't believe what I was hearing from him. It was kind of scary in a way, you know.
So I'm taking it you didn't go with him?
No, I passed him on the offer.
What other theories have you heard?
I've heard a couple of theories. You know, there's some that say he just used brute force, basically, and then, you know, which is kind of hard to believe, because it seems like that if you could use one guy to do that much work, that, you know, you'd have construction workers out there doing it all the time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's, you know, these guys are looking for ways to save money, and if they could pay one guy to move a 30-ton block rather than rent a crane, cranes, you know, it seems like it would make sense to do it with the one guy. But, you know, I've heard, you know, that he used the wheel somehow, a Chris Dunn theory. He's thinking that he somehow flipped the polarity of the atoms within the blocks, which would make them opposite of the Earth's, and that would make them basically levitate or make them lighter. And I've heard other theories about how he basically just, like the Egyptians, you know, they pulled him into place. But, you know, I don't see that just one guy. You know, it just seemed kind of hard to believe that.
Yeah, with Egypt, they can say, well, there were all these slaves, and they just yanked them. But with one guy, you're not pulling a 30-ton block around.
Yeah. And then, I mean, the castle that he built is a couple stories high, and these blocks are tons. And so he somehow lifted these up two stories into the air and set them.
And we can't make light of the fact that he just turned around and moved it one day. Like, it was no big deal.
Yeah. The original site, I did go to the original site, and there's a castle there, too.
Really?
Yeah, but it's not as... he didn't build it out of the big blocks like he did at the site now, the homestead site. It looked more like, they were just regular size, smaller blocks.
So he didn't move... Did he move some of the blocks from the original site, or...?
Yeah, I know he moved the obelisk, which is... It's, I think it's like 30 foot in height. I know that was one of the pieces that he moved. And then the gate...
So he didn't move the whole castle?
Nah, just pretty good portion of it. But, I mean, you can see at the new site where the quarry is, you can kind of see where he did a lot of work there, too.
Huh. So did he use bigger blocks when he moved to the new site? Or were they about the same?
I'm thinking he did most of them around the same size, but then, like, the 30-ton block he did at the new site.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm wondering the reason he moved to the new site was because he could move bigger blocks for some reason.
Right. Well, what are your thoughts on how he did this?
I know that he experimented a lot with electricity and magnetism, and I wonder if that had something to do with it. And I know that when he looked for the land, he wanted to make sure it had the underground water system. And he does have a well that's dug down into the ground that you can actually walk down a set of stairs to get down to the water.
Huh.
And I'm wondering if there was a way he was using this underground water system with maybe electricity or with the wheel to weaken that area, the magnetic field or gravity in that area, just to make these blocks lighter. Not necessarily levitate, but make them a lot lighter and more manageable.
Right.
And that would explain why he could use the smaller chain to lift this big block, because it wouldn't be nearly as heavy as 30 tons if he somehow figured out a way to make it lighter.
Do you think he did it the same way the Egyptians did?
I guess that's kind of hard to say, because there was really no evidence left behind from the Egyptians of like the tripods he used, and he used chains, and there really wasn't any evidence of that. But I'm sure that he was definitely on to something.
Well, yeah.
And he might have used different types of tools, but he definitely knew something about how to lift these huge blocks and set them in place exactly like they did over there in Egypt. So when he says that, I believe that he did know something about it, but his methods might have been just a little bit different.
I've also heard rumors that there was stuff that people took right after he died.
Yeah, I've heard that too. That I've heard that he was really secretive about his living quarters. And from what I understand, a lot of things were taken from his living quarters that could have explained a lot. And maybe whoever took it didn't realize what it was or what it was used for. So, we'll never know exactly what happened there. It could have been something that, like I was saying, they didn't realize what it was, but it could have been the piece to the puzzle that would have made sense about everything.
Yeah, I heard something too that they thought someone who did know what things were went in and took stuff as well.
Yeah, I've never heard that before, but I heard that, I've heard different stories. I heard the government came in and took some stuff, and I've heard that he had a machine that was based a threat to, certain companies that tried to put him down, try to put him out of business or whatever, take his stuff from him. There was a rumor that the guys that jumped him at the other place in Florida City, that was why they were after him, was because he knew of some, he had a device that could create electricity. Or he had something that company out there didn't want everybody to know about. So they sent these guys over there to basically shut him down so he couldn't put this information out there. And that could explain why he was really secretive.
Yeah. It's just, it's such a mind-boggling mystery. I mean, ancient sites are too, but you have so much around them. I mean, you see these ancient sites around the world, and obviously they were on to probably a similar type of science, whatever they were using to construct these sites. But for him to just pop up out of nowhere, build this castle, and then go away.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, you may have solved all these mysteries for us, and then you didn't tell us what you figured out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I think you said there's over 1,100 tons of stone there.
Yeah, that's what they say, definitely.
Wow.
And then, I mean, there's a few of them that are in the 30-ton range. You know, like the obelisk was supposed to be 20-something tons. And then the base of the Marine Pond is supposed to be around 30 tons itself.
And put that in perspective for people. How many cars weigh 30 tons?
Definitely a lot. I mean, I'm trying to think of...
I think most cars weigh around a ton.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
So you're looking at about 30 cars packed into one stone.
Yeah.
And he lifted it up.
Yeah, he somehow lifted it up out of the quarry and then moved it to its location and then set it up, you know, upright.
By himself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was an impressive man no matter what.
Yeah.
So your book you're hoping to put out next year?
Yeah, I'm hoping to have it out towards the beginning of next year. Can't promise that yet, but it's definitely a work in progress.
Okay, and do you have a title for it yet?
I had a title for it, but I really wasn't happy with it, so I'm kind of working on that still.
All right, okay. And once again, tell people where they can find your stuff on the internet.
Let's see, I've got a few different sites. I have one at WordPress. I'll give you the whole site here. It's universalwavetheory.wordpress.com, and that's where I have all my articles.
Okay.
And then I have another one at Weebly, which is davidcarr.weebly.com.
And Carr is spelled with two R's.
Yes, C-A-R-R. And then the Wix one is researchbydavidcarr.wix.com/davidcarr.
All right. Well, I thank you for talking to us about this. I find it utterly fascinating. And I like that your stuff is very grounded and you're not jumping to aliens and other completely unprovable ideas here.
Yeah, I'm just trying my best to find the truth, you know. And I'm, you know, not going to kid myself about certain things like aliens, you know. I mean, yeah, it could be possible, but...
Sure, sure.
I don't see that evidence yet, so...
Yeah, there's zero evidence for it other than the fact that we don't understand it.
Yeah.
All right.
I also wanted to bring up a friend of mine.
Sure.
Her name's Karen Martell, and she's been posting a lot of my stuff on here. I just wanted to thank her for all the help she's done. And she just wrote a book called Guardians of the Crystals, and you can find that on Amazon.
All right. Okay, we're going to take you out with some Psyche Corporation, and we'll see you next week.
Come in. Understand the numbers pouring over your connection to perfection. 5, 8, 3. Have you heard the singing soaking into our transmission? 21, 34, 55, 89, 144. Can you hear the ballet? It plays the world. warning to be wary. You are getting to the heart of the universe. Venture calls and Tatriot. Chambers number 1597. And counting. And counting.